Welcome to the Public Handicapper Podcast. On this week's pod, we are handicapping the Pick 5 from Oaklawn Park on Saturday, May 2nd. This is show number 62, May 1st, 2020. I'm Scott Carson, founder of Public Handicapper, and I'm joined by my co-host, Hall of Fame handicapper, Chris Larmy. Chris, are you prepared for the first Saturday in May?
I am. I think I am. I definitely don't have the winner of the Kentucky Derby picked out, but I have some opinions on the Arkansas Derby, which seems to be a pretty good stand-in for all of us who, you know, are big Derby fans. But because of all the stuff going on now, we'll have to settle for this and the virtual Derby, I guess, that they're putting together with all the past Derby champions and Triple Crown champions. So it should be a fun weekend anyway.
Are we going to have to, we're going to have to do a pod for that virtual Derby winner contest?
No, I got you the cold exact, or might want to box it, but it's the two best standout Triple Crown winners were Secretariat and Citation. It's not even a contest after that.
All right. Well, we'll leave it at that. And we do have a returning special guest. He finished ninth in the 2019 NHC. Fifth in the 2018 Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge. And the last time he was on the show, he gave out a 25-1 top pick. He's Marshall Graham. Marshall, welcome back.
Well, thanks for having me on. I gave out that 25-1 top pick, and the rest of my picks were awful. And ultimately, I had a losing betting day. So even with that top pick, it couldn't get me out for the day. But I'm here to give it another try and excited about Oaklawn closing day. I got to say, I've never enjoyed a race meet as much as I have locked down Oaklawn Park. It's everything I could want from racing. We've got 10 route races that are effectively full. Obviously, the two divisions of the Arkansas Derby have 9 horses each, but the other 8 races are filled, oversubscribed. And it's just been wonderful racing, full fields, full competitive fields, and races where you'll bet horses to win, where there was a run of 33 races that didn't have a horse that was even money or less. And so, Oaklawn's everything I could want it to be as a horse player. I'm going to miss it. I'm glad to see other tracks are opening up. But it's been fun.
Yeah. I mean, we're going to remember a lot of things about this pandemic, but many horse players are going to remember these giant fields at Oaklawn Park. It probably will never happen again, as good as it's been. I'm going to defer to Chris as far as any intro questions, since we have a lot of races to do. Do you have anything, Chris?
Yeah, I just wanted to ask Marshall, and we'll get to the race, but he has a horse with a legitimate chance in a big race, and this horse, Warrior's Reward, actually took the ownership group all the way to the Preakness, a Triple Crown race. And I was just wondering, you know, what it felt like as an owner to have a contender in a Triple Crown race or even in a major stakes race like on Saturday.
Well, it was sort of an unbelievable experience, an experience we really didn't expect to have. When the horse said we thought it was a sprinter, we thought he was a sprinter. We didn't even nominate him for the Triple Crown. And then when he won his allowance race impressively the day before the Arkansas Derby last year, we're thinking Sir Barton on the Preakness undercard. We were still sort of mulling over what to do next. And it's really when Country House and Maximum Security came out of the Preakness that we thought, you know, we've got to roll the dice. And, I mean, it was a fun experience. We had we had we have 35 partners on the horse. So we had a group of 75 up there. They had us in a chalet in the infield. And it was a wonderful experience. And, you know, the horse got out of the lead, was on the lead turning for home. And, you know, I thought ran a very, very, you know, I thought ran very well. In fact, I think it's been the best race of his career. I mean, he was up against a super hot pace and held on for fourth when everyone around him collapsed to the back. And we were really pleased and proud of him. We lost a lot of the rest of the year to colic, which is unfortunate because we were going to go to the Indiana Derby and sort of were working our way to some of the major fall stakes. And we lost our three-year-old year, but he's come back and run well. We had a huge winner's circle. I think about 200 people in the winner's circle for the Razorback. Ironically, I wasn't there. So I was about the only partner that was not at the Razorback. I taught that day. We don't get President's Day off. So I taught, and, you know, it's always been a dream of ours. Clay Sanders and I are the founding partners of 10 Track Racing to, you know, win races at Oaklawn. The Oaklawn Handicap is one we've always had circled, and we're excited to be back, and we think we have a big shot. I mean, I plan to talk more about my horse in the 12th race because that's the horse I plan to pick.
All right. Yeah. Well, yeah, any follow-up there, Chris?
Well, just, you know, what was the feeling when you were turning from home in the Preakness with the lead? It must have been pretty exciting.
Yeah, I mean, we were watching from the infield, and, you know, we knew the pace was really fast. You know, that was our big concern. What's interesting is that, like, if Market King had been an early entrant, I don't think we would have gone because, you know, we wanted to be in a scenario where we'd be lone speeder. There wouldn't be as much pace. And Market King entered fairly late for Dwayne Lucas and looked like he was going to be, you know, speed with us. And that made us nervous. And we went pretty quick to the quarter and a half, but about down the back stretch where he opened up by about a length and a half, you know, then he started to really get butterflies. I mean, at that point I thought, well, maybe this might happen. And, you know, as they turned for home and Larry Colmus, you know, said, you know, Warriors charge, you know, off the turn in the lead. And he fought on pretty well. And it was exciting. Now, the War of Will came quickly up on his inside. At that point, you know, we were hoping to hang on for second. I had a big place bet and a big exacta, so that would have been nice. It faded the fourth, but it was for at least from about the 5-furlong pole until the top of the stretch. You know, we really thought we might be hoisting that Woodlawn vase over our heads. So it was fun. It was an exciting, weekend. I went up early. It was right after, you know, school had ended and graduation. So I went up to Pimlico early and I soaked it all in. You know, you hope you get to have those kinds of experiences again, but you never know. And, you know, the odds are probably against you. And so, you know, especially the way, you know, we don't buy all that many horses. We, you know, we put together, you know, decent sized partnerships, but don't have huge budgets. And, you know, we Warriors Charges group, we bought four. I think that group consisted of four yearlings were in this group, four yearlings and 2-year-old purchases. And so, you know, we've grown a little bit. We'll buy more yearlings. You know, this latest group is 9 yearlings or now 2-year-olds that we have. But you know, the odds of getting into even a Triple Crown race to where you're a real contender is such a challenge. So we savored every moment of it. A lot of fun. And we're, you know, again, we're enjoying our little run we're having now with him.
Well, I can imagine how exciting it must have been because I owned 4.37% of a horse in 2004. And she won one race and it was at Aqueduct on the turf. She won by 6 lengths and it was incredible. And there were like no fans there. So it was still amazing, even that experience. So I can't even imagine a Triple Crown race.
Well, I mean, I get really excited when I have a nickel claimer turning for home and, you know, watching the race on a Tuesday at Parks. And so, but this is something else. And obviously experiencing it live. And you know, taking up the whole scene, taking in the whole scene was great. And look, even though there'll be no fans there this weekend at Oaklawn, I really feel like I've been a part of this meet. I mean, just You know, strange. I went to Oakland on opening day. I usually go 6 or 7 times during the meet. And yet I feel so connected because I've watched, I've handicapped every card. I've watched the races each day. And so, you know, even not being there, I think it's been a, you know, fun experience. My friends that I would otherwise go with, I've been texting back and forth. And so, you know, still as a fan, I think, you know, it's being able to work, you know, obviously I want to go back and enjoy live racing, but, you know, hopefully those days are to come soon.
Fantastic. Well, let's get to the races then. We start with the 10th race at Oaklawn, the first race of the Pick 5, which will run from the 10th through 14th race. It's an allowance optional claimer, 1 mile and 1/16. All of these races are routes. Purse is $61,000 for 3-year-olds. And Marshall, why don't we have you start first?
Well, I'm going to go with the number 4, Villainous, in this race. And I'm going to play this horse. It'll be somewhat of a center of my Pick 5, and I'm going to play this horse to win. I think you're going to get a good price, not necessarily the 15-1, but this horse, opening weekend for Jeremiah Englehart, the horse was working at that point with 3 Technique, who was in good form. 3 Technique was Jeremiah's horse that ran, I think their opening stakes was the Smarty Jones. I don't remember, but ran really well in the opening stakes, ran a big second. And Villainous was toe-to-toe with him in workouts and ran really well in that race. Came back and got caught up in that wicked pace in the Southwest Stakes. And then sort of from that point, didn't run all that well in that allowance race, so didn't run well on March 14th. And so Jeremiah's backed off, has given the horse 5 works since, has 2 really fast works, the work on the 11th of April, work on the 19th of April, the work on the 19th from the gate, and then just a tightener on the 25th. And so I think they backed off. You can cross out the Southwest and, you know, I'm willing to ignore the last race in the slop and just hope this horse is getting back to form. We'll obviously have to improve off that first effort. And, you know, again, going to get a good price, maybe a double digit price to kick off this Pick 5. And again, because of the competitiveness of these fields, will be a nice win bet.
Well, I also noticed the fantastic workouts, notably best workouts he's ever run since the last race. So I'm with you. He's a major contender. Chris, where did you land?
Well, Villainous is definitely one of the horses that I like in here. I agree with Marshall for everything that he said and you said. Horse really fits. My only concern with him is he did get caught up in that hot pace, and it could be a hot pace again today, so, or on Saturday. So that's probably my one concern there, is what sort of trip he'll get and can they get him to settle off? Because if they do, I think he's a big contender. There were 2 horses, long shots, that I like as well in here. One, probably the one I like a little more than Villainous, is the 12 horse Background, who actually beat Villainous in his last race. It was on a sloppy track, but that was coming in off of a really big performance just before that. And then they entered him in the stakes race, the prep for this, what is it? The Rebel, was there, or the Oaklawn Stakes, I guess they called it. Well, that Mr. Big News won at a big price. And he basically just didn't lift a hoof in that race. Just a complete clunker, which is why he's 15-1 on the morning line. But that race was so bad that, and it's just clear that he didn't handle the track at all, that I'm willing to throw it out, particularly because since then they worked him and he just sizzled in 47-1, a bullet, best of 50 on April 26th. And if you compare that to all of his workouts, beginning back in January at Oaklawn Park, his second fastest 4-long work prior to that was 49-4. So he was sizzling. I think he told us that you can just toss that last race. And if you do, he absolutely fits in here. at a big price. So, I mean, and I like Villainous as well. And then the other horse, the other total bomb in here that I think I would include is the six horse Amen Corner, who I think I liked a little bit last time he ran. He got off to a bad start and he was way, way back in a race where Shooter Shoot and Blackberry Wine pretty much separated themselves from the field. But he did put in a pretty good late run. And given the race before that, I think it's a complete toss on the poly track. He just didn't like the scent. And his races before those were all pretty good. And his trainer has started a couple horses at Oaklawn, and they both ran decent races. So I think if the pace is hot, the six horse Amen Corner might be able to clunk up and at least get a piece, and he's 50-1 on the morning line. And you know, who knows, he might even be able to win this pretty wide open race. So for me, I like probably Background the best, and then Villainous and Amen Corner are their two price horses. One, a real bomb in a very competitive race where you could talk about many others. And I'll turn it over to you, Scott, to see if you have somebody else other than those three that you like, or if you're with us on those.
Well, let's put it this way. In the pick five, I am with you on all those. And I actually will have to go very deep in this race because I think almost any horse can win. The horse that I landed on is another insane 50-1, and that is Strong Tide, the three horse. So his best two numbers came going two turns. And his first time as a two-year-old, his first time going two turns as a two-year-old, he got second at 50-1. In his three-year-old debut race, he matched his best on the sheets and improved his buyer top by 12 points. And that race had a favorable speed flow, and he was closing. So he'll probably get an upgrade from racingflow.com. There's only one horse that has run since that race, and that horse won at about 3-1. I typed up a list of stats that I would like to share on this trainer and this horse. The trainer, second off a layoff of 60 to 180 days, scores with a 293 ROI, and he has wins at 20-1, 45-1, 30-1, and 19-1. His lifetime ROI at Oaklawn is 206. His lifetime ROI with the jock is 329. His last 5 years with this jock at this track, he's 6-for-21 with a 532 ROI. He gets in light versus some recent maiden winners like Prodigious Bay, carries a lot of weight. He's a homebred, and the trainer owner, I don't know if it's his wife or his mother or his daughter, but the owner trainer combo, they bred the horse. They bred the dam, and the dam had an 11-for-36 record. And she won sprinting, routing, dirt, turf, even synthetic. And she was a four-time stakes winner. Now, the sire is English Channel, so the longer the better. And he's never gone longer than a mile. His half-sister by Old Fashioned was 5-for-9 and a two-time stakes winner, routing on dirt. And her half-brother by Birdstone is a route winner. Finally, his best workout ever was before his last preppy race. And often, I noticed this, I don't know how often, but it feels like it's fairly often where a horse will run his best workouts, but he doesn't win right off that workout. He, you know, it's still a preppy, like it's still a preppy race. And so I think that the nice workout and matching his two-year-old best, he's sitting on go. He's got a great post position for this big field. He's my pick to win. I will use the horses you all mentioned, and I'll also throw in, because I want to hit the pick five, Candy Tycoon, Prodigious Bay, just in case he's that good, Rushy, and Kadesh if he gets in.
Marshall, you can jump in, and then I'll pile on.
Let me add, I mean, I'm going to use as sort of the I'm going to center my tickets around Villainous and Rushy. I just think Rushy's the fastest of these horses, and you know, was a little bit against the track when he broke his maiden, was on the inside part of the track after running between horses. I'm going to, you know, I'm going to then use a little bit of your all's horses, a little bit of Candy Tycoon and Spanish Kingdom. Spanish Kingdom's just working really well on the dirt for turf horse. Just enough to make me not want to lose to that horse. I'm against Prodigious Bay. I'm going to, you know, use defensively because I'm going to make stands elsewhere on this ticket. Loose on the lead on a day where speed seemed to carry. The other route races on that card will run much faster. And I know you can look at the Oaklawn Stakes and look how that race just totally collapsed. But that pace was ridiculous. And some of those horses, third, fourth, fifth finisher, actually held on. But in the 12th, 9th, 8th, and 7th, those races were much more quickly run. And those races tend to hold together. So I'm just dubious of Prodigious Bay. And when other horses look him in the eye, as have happened before, right, when he hasn't gotten the lead, I'm just wanting it to crack. So that's my, I'm going to use again, the 4 and 11 is sort of the top part of my ticket, 5, 7, 12 underneath, and then some bombs in the, you know, C spot.
Well, I am just to add a couple of things. Prodigious Bay, I like the horse. Because he was a pod pick, I think, last time he ran when he won at 8-1. So I kind of like him, but I agree with Marshall that the reason I liked him is I thought he could clear. And if he cleared, I thought he could be really dangerous. I don't see him clearing in this field, which is, you know, I think the pace will cook up. So I think it probably does favor, to some extent, the closers, although I wouldn't throw out Prodigious Bay because you never know what the jockeys are going to do. And he does get Flavian Pratt, which I think is a bit of an upgrade on the rider. Rushy, I think, is probably the most likely winner, but not by a whole lot. And the main reason, just, you know, he ran second to Charlatan. He's been working really well. But the main reason I think he's very dangerous is just the trainer has been on fire, Michael McCarthy. His last 8 starters, he's won 3. 6 of them have been in the exact. He's all of them been in the money. His last 3 starts at Oaklawn, he's won 2 of them in the last 5 years. So, I mean, he's got several horses running on the card, and I would pay attention to all of them because he is red hot. He's a good trainer. He's one of the up and coming trainers. He's kind of like Brad Cox was a few years ago. So Rushy, I think you got to include. And the last thing I would just on Scott's horse, Strong Tide. If the race does fall apart, you kind of want a horse that's going to be sitting back and can finish. And this horse, if you look at his late pace rating on time form, it's very good. And if you look at his plot on optics, the optics plot for this race, he's a big square in quadrant 4. Probably doesn't mean anything to most of the listeners, but that's a good place to be if you're in a race that might melt down. So, you know, he might have a tactical edge if it is a hot pace. And he's definitely a 50-1 shot along with Almond Corner that might possibly win, but at least could really juice up the vertical exotics in this race. Or maybe even blow up the pick 5.
Well, I did want to point out, actually, that your angle on Prodigious Bay, besides the clearing, you liked that he was second off a layoff as a young 3-year-old. And that's exactly what Strong Tide is, and matching his 2-year-old best. So I think by almost... He's most likely to actually improve significantly on that prep race. And if he gets in the try, I'm winning because I'll probably do, you know, I'll probably work out an all Strong Tide situation, or, you know, I might exclude a couple of different horses, but if he gets into the try, just ask me how much I'm cashing.
Well, he's bred to run all day. Actually, he's bred to run on the turf all day. So I think his future someday is probably on the turf, but the race could really set up for him here, and he should be finishing fast.
All right, well, let's get to our first stakes race. It is the Arkansas Derby, a grade one race. It's the 11th, a mile and an eighth on dirt, the first division with a purse of $500,000 for three-year-olds. Chris, can you beat Charlatan?
Maybe. I don't think Saturday is the day to try to beat him, though. I mean, he's so eerily like Justify. There's so many parallels there. And with Shooter's Chute scratching out of the race, I mean, he just can open up as big a lead as Martin Garcia wants to early on. Just let the horse, you know, run his race. He's so much faster, has a tactical edge, draws the rail, Bob Baffert, Oaklawn Park. His breeding's, you know, says he should be able to get 9 furlongs, especially on an uncontested lead. It's really, really hard to go against that horse. I think it's the most likely winner on the card and probably, you know, logical single, which means the pick five becomes a pick four in terms of payouts, probably. So you really got to catch some prices on the other leg if you want to play this. But, you know, there might be a way to play the race anyway. I was looking for a way to play this race vertically. I picked Basin. In fact, I put a lot of money on Basin on the pick five, and he failed me last time. Did have an excuse. I thought on the backside I had it, and then he kind of ran up behind tiring horses, and by the time he shook loose, he really didn't have a chance. But I don't see him beating Charlatan, although he's probably, you know, the one that's most likely to run second behind him. But there is a bomb in this race that I think might be able to clunk up for second, and that's the three-horse Momosa, who, if you watch his last race, he was in the same race as Amen Corner, and he ran third behind Shooter's Chute and Blackberry Wine. But he was dead last and literally like 20 lengths back, and he came roaring up the rail and just blew by those two in the gallop out. Really impressive stretch run by that horse in the gallop out. And, you know, if Charlatan, someone tries to chase him early, he might be able to, you know, gut anybody that stays close, and Momosa might be able to just come clunking up with the same kind of a run that he had in his last race and get up for second at a really big price. So to me, that might be the one way you play it, is throw Momosa in there underneath Charlatan and maybe even in the try, in the third place in the try, if you want to bet this race. But I'm not going to try to beat Charlatan. If I play the pick five, I'll probably be singling him.
Yeah, he's going to end out. He's going to reduce the value of the pick five, but I will point out that I singled Tom's Day Todd. I still didn't hit the pick five, but when I singled Tom's Day Todd at 4-5, the pick five still paid $296,000. The difference here is that Charlatan will be an even heavier favorite. He'll probably be 1-5, as he should be.
1-9, maybe, but yeah, 1-5 probably at least. Yeah.
1-11. Let's turn it up to 11. Marshall, what did you think?
I'm not going to get cute and try to beat Charlatan. I mean, they wouldn't, you know, there's so many reasons why he just towers over the field in terms of figures, and they just wouldn't come here without him being fully cranked. They orchestrated this splitting of divisions, and their division is much weaker than the second division. I think this is, I compared it earlier to, this is like the old Northern Spur they used to run, which is the open $100,000 stakes in the undercard for three-year-olds under the Arkansas Derby. And that, it's kind of got that feel. It's really him against these others. I am with Chris on Basin, and I'm actually going to focus on trying to hit an exacta and try through Basin. Oaklawn has they don't have Trackus, but they have this new GPS technology that tracks ground loss and velocity and different splits per half furlong. It's gmaxequine.com. If you go look it up, and Basin just ran a fascinating race last time, was stuck behind horses in a little bit of traffic. But once he got loose, he really ran and was doing a lot of running late, not as fast as Mr. Big News or Farmington Road, but among the horses who were near to that lead, he was running strong. And so, I think his trip is somewhat hidden now. Also he's the sort of, since there's so little in this division, he's going to be bet. And that exacta isn't going to pay much, but I'm going to take it. I'm going to take Charlatan over Basin, and I'm going to play the straight try Charlatan over Basin over Gubin and Morris. I'm going to take what they give me, and I'm not going to try to get too cute. So, I'm going to play the straight 111 exacta and then the straight 111.4. I thought Gubin and Morris's race is fine. I think, again, he's a very nice horse, and I just think he's probably – those Basin and Gubin and Morris are probably the two best of this next group of horses.
Well, I will agree with the two of you that Charlatan is unlikely to be beat. I'm actually against Basin. Chris convinced me to include him in the pick five last time. And, the breeding says that this horse is more of a sprinter. I know Liam's Map is a sire that can get a distance horse, but on the dam side, the dam and every sibling, we're all faster sprinting. So until this horse wins going two turns, I'm off him. I'm also against Anneau d'Or. I think it was a fluke that he finished second in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. The only thing he's done since is just not caught Thousand Words, who's turned out to be a flash in the pan. So I think he really belongs on turf, and I think Basin belongs sprinting. So if I play vertically at all, I would just put Gubin Morris in second, but it's probably not even worth betting at all. So so I'll just have to sort of pin my hopes on Charlatan being a champ, and I'll take it even at 1-11.
Well, it sounds like we're all not trying to beat Charlatan, but we all have some different ideas about what to do underneath. I'm with Marshall that Basin. It was all his trip was a lot worse actually than it looked. And what was funny was he had a perfect trip up until they headed into the second turn. I mean, I thought he was going to win because he just had this, he was kind of sitting all by himself. He was closer to the pace than everybody else, but the front runners, it was kind of clear he had them, in his sights. But then he just got trapped in behind him and didn't get to run until it was way too late. So Scott might be right. Horse might be better, going shorter. But I think you can't, tell yet. I mean, the verdict is still out. And he was a really good two-year-old. But he's probably going to be the third choice in the wagering. And exacta with Charlatan isn't going to pay a whole lot. That's why I was looking at like Mimosa maybe as the one who could break up those two obvious horses, Gubin and Morris and Basin. And then you might get a try or an exacta that actually pays something if you can break those up. So that's just the way I play. I can't play a favorite exacta. So we'll see how that works out. But it'll be interesting to see Charlatan. He does seem like a star in the making, and he'll definitely should be able to strut his stuff in here.
The next race is the 12th at Oaklawn. It's the Oaklawn Handicap with Marshall's horse. It's 1 1/8 on dirt, purse of $600,000. It's a grade 2 for 4-year-olds and up. And Marshall, we know who you're picking. Give us some details on why you like him.
Well, I think this is a great spot for our horse. First off, it's a Warrior's Charge. You know, we'd initially thought this horse was a sprinter. So when we bought this horse as a 2-year-old, you know, Liz Crow, who's our agent, you know, saw the horse training in Florida as an early January 2-year-old, and you know, found out the horse was for sale and bought it. And the horse was doing so well with Brad Cox that you know, Brad told Saul Kuhman of Maniket that it was the best colt in his barn. So Saul bought in before the horse had even started running. And you know, we thought this horse is going to be a very nice sprinter. The breeding says sprinting. It's a Munnings. Munnings has had a little bit more success routing, in part because of Warrior's Charge, but it has had others like Finite, who had success around two turns. But his average winning distance is still only 6.3. But it wasn't until we got this horse routing that he could use his natural speed, get out in front, and do his thing. And he's especially good late in races. Now, part of that can be attributed to the fact that many of his races, the pace has been very slow, and that doesn't look like it'll be the case on this day. But he does have a fairly good kick home. So he does look like he's got good cruising speed and can kick home pretty strongly. You know, the question is, what are going to be the other tactics here? You know, it looks like there's speed on paper, but to me, it's really Mr. Freeze and Improbable. Improbable's a notoriously poor breaker and breaking from the 14. And Mr. Freeze, you know, I think they're going to want to go with us, you know, but he hasn't necessarily been on the lead when he's won races. He hasn't, the paces he set have not been as fast as Warrior's Charge. And Joe Talamo has had a meet where he's done a very poor job getting his horses out of the gate. Now, it's especially true early on the meet, but even more recently, he's had a couple of horses that have not broken well. So, you know, in an ideal world, Warrior's Charge breaks cleanly. Mr. Freeze is a little bit hesitant out of the gate and probably does his usual thing. And we're out there on the lead and we're going fast, but we're making everyone catch us, right? So I expect the pace to be fast. I would in some sense be disappointed if the pace weren't fast. But the question is, will we be head-to-head dueling with Mr. Freeze, or will we be in between Mr. Freeze and Improbable? If that's the case, then we probably would have a tough time getting the job done. But the horse is doing great. You're going to get a price. Again, on number power, his peak buyer is a 98. So number power, if you look at the sheets or whatever you're looking at, he doesn't line up with these other horses, but he's training phenomenally, and you're going to get every bit of 8 to 10 to 1. There are 4 or 5 horses that are going to get more bet than he is. And I just think it's you know, again, I have a lot to gain if this horse wins outside of betting it, right? Because all of a sudden he's worth a lot more as a potential stallion. You know, I get a piece of the prize money, but I'm going to bet this horse like there's no tomorrow, because I feel that confident in what I'm going to get versus what price I'm going to get. So he's going to be the center of my ticket. You know, I'm most scared of Improbable. I think there's a chance Improbable gets a trip like CC did in the Apple Blossom, that if he's right behind us dueling with Mr. Freeze, that he's able to come over the top of us. But Improbable had a tough race 3 weeks ago and ran just huge, made a huge improvement from 3 to 4. And I don't know, you know, I'm not a real believer in the bounce theory, but 3 weeks off short rest, you know, not necessarily under Baffert's care because he stayed at Oaklawn. I would be somewhat, you know, that would make me somewhat nervous. Breaking from the 14, all those things combined, even though I'm the most scared of him, you know, there are a lot of things that point to he may not be able to fire his best shot. But that's the way I see it.
Well, I'm going to, when I say my piece, I'm going to wash your worries about Improbable away. Chris, what did you think?
I love that you're going to wash his worries away. It sounds like the title to a song. You got to work on that, Scott.
Well, it's either that or a jingle for a commercial.
Yes, a McDonald's commercial or something. Okay. Warrior's Charge. I liked a lot of what I heard about from you, Marcia. Just a couple questions. His workouts have been much faster than typical. What's the story there? Are you trying to just get him ready for this because it's a target race, or Is he just feeling better than he has in the past? Because his workouts really are noticeably quicker lately.
Yeah, I think that he's just coming to his own. He started off the layoff. You know, we've spaced out his schedule. Obviously, you know, our plan was never to run in the – so it was always to go from Razorback to the Oakland Handicap. They moved the Oakland Handicap, so it's 2 weeks later than it would have been. But I think that's more the horse is just coming into his own, right? He's always been a fairly quick workhorse, but his work on April 19th, where he went 47 flat, was outstanding. Brad is really confident in the horse. He couldn't be doing any better. So, you know, I guess the flip side of this is he over eager? Is he going to be hard to rate? He and Flo have a good relationship, and, you know, I don't see a scenario where we would rate the horse, right? Unless there's a sort of surprise runoff speed that I don't see on paper. You know, I imagine us going, and, you know, I think he's had enough experience not to just run off, but, you know, I'd like to see him set a pace 23-1, and get out there and get cruising.
Well, I certainly hope that's the strategy, because I think that gives him his best chance. Clearly to me, Mr. Freeze is the other speed horse. I think Improbable is much more likely to, especially with that post draw, to be very content if he does break alertly, which he doesn't always do. Even if he does, I think they'll be happy to stalk in third behind Warrior's Charge and Mr. Freeze. And I'm absolutely with you on Mr. Freeze. And we've talked about this before in the pod. You know, Joe Talamo is not a rider I want on a speed horse. He just is not a good gate rider. It doesn't mean they don't get out at gate in every race, but you know, he has more often than most good riders that get good mounts, he has trouble getting him out of the gate for whatever the reason. So, you know, I wouldn't be shocked if you can get the jump on him and even slam the door on him early if you're aggressive out of the gate. And Flo's been really aggressive in these kind of races this year, much more so than I think, at least when I've watched him in the past. He's definitely starting to use, you know, the speed as a weapon on the dirt, which is, I think, always a smart move when you're a jockey. The other thing about Mr. Freeze, you know, he's definitely run some fast races that can win this. But if you look at his form, he really is one of these horses that does not string together two big races. When he runs a big race, he usually regresses off that performance. He did it as a 3-year-old. He did it as a 4-year-old. And now he's coming off another big race as a 5-year-old. So I think there's a good chance he is not going to run his best. So even if he does break alertly and he's battling with you on the lead, you might be able to, you know, put him away before they turn for home. I'm kind of against Mr. Freeze in here because I think he will take money. So, I mean, I think all that's a positive for you. I do agree with you, though, Improbable is kind of a scary horse, and I'll be interested to hear what Scott has to say. I'm sure the negative will be, you know, he's coming off that really big effort where he was really wide and still gave, you know, Tom's did taught everything he could handle off the bench. So, you know, but that's a horse that just managed to find ways to lose, and it's its own fault. So from the outside post with Martin Garcia, you know, he could get another really wide trip or do something goofy out of the gate or whatever. So I don't think he's invincible by any stretch. And he is being wheeled back quickly, which I thought would be a negative. So I looked up the stats, though, with Bob Baffert, and he actually does really well off 3 weeks rest in stakes races. So I don't know if that's so much of a negative, although – he is coming off such a big effort, Improbable is that, you know, maybe he regresses and he, you know, so there's negatives there. So I'm with you. I really like Warrior's Charge. But there's a horse I like even better in here. And it won't surprise people who have listened to the pod for a while because I've touted him in the past. And that's the 9-horse Tacitus, who somehow is just not getting any respect in this race. I mean, I haven't heard anybody out on Twitterverse or any of the articles I've read about this race picking Tacitus to win.
I'm not sure why he gets no love at all, but you know, his target really was to buy a World Cup. The feeling is he's better at a mile and a quarter, which may be true, but if you look at his past performances, his wins are all at a mile and eighth or less. You know, he's got a really good record at that distance. He had won his first three starts after his maiden race. If you throw that one out, then he won three in a row, all at mile and eighth or less. You know, he ran a really good second at a mile and eighth in the Jim Dandy, where he had just a horrific trip. The only time he was out of the exacta at a mile and eighth or less was his last start, which was off a long layoff in the Saudi Cup against, you know, a juiced up maximum security in a race that was clearly a prep. The target was the Dubai World Cup. They didn't get a chance to run in that, but this is kind of plan B. But he should be sitting on a big race. He's a horse that had a lot of bad trips that weren't his fault, I thought, last year. I thought it was some bad decisions and circumstances for the most part that caused his problems. And I think Johnny Velasquez is a smart rider. He should be able to avoid trouble. And I think Tacitus is going to run a really big race. And he's probably my play if he does get overlooked on the window. I like him with Warrior's Charge, and I think you've got to respect Improbable. There's another price horse I like in here, but I'm going to turn it over to Scott because I think he might like this horse. So we'll see what he has to say.
Well, I'm absolutely with you on Tacitus. The horse is just fast and he's game. I mean, even though he ended out disappointing last season, he proved in the Wood Memorial that he can overcome trouble. And it's just a matter of time, in my opinion, before he reasserts himself. So I will be including in the pick five. But yes, I do have a bomb that I prefer. And I like him to win the race. And I'll have him in the pick five. I'll have win money on him. And that is Bravazo. He was fast game as a three-year-old. And he ran his best race in the Clark Handicap at the end of a really long campaign, a sort of a standard Lucas campaign, and he ran a number there that if he can run that same number, he can win this race, especially from the inside post. He took his four-year-old year mostly off, but he started working back into shape, and two races ago in the Razorback, he was kept unnecessarily wide on the first turn. I looked it up to see who did that, and it was Talamo. So he was like excessively wide on the first turn when there were no horses on his inside. And then he made a big rally around the outside 4 to 5 wide on the second turn. And that was the race that Warrior's Charge last won. And, you know, he got the same number as Warrior's Charge actually, because he had such a wide trip. And even though he was far back, so that number that he got was not his as good as his three-year-old best, but it was close. His next race is on the slop, which he hates, as indicated by his 0-for-5 slop record. Now he's had some time since that race, shows a nice bullet work, and just based on my read, is he looks like he's going to run as good as he did two races ago, but this time he's got Miguel Mena riding him. And I have seen this jockey ride the rail so many times, even in tight quarters. And I think Lucas asked him to ride just for this reason. He's got a great post. He can sit inside off the big speed duel, which I think is going to end out transpiring with 14 horses. This has got to happen. And Lucas and Mena have a lifetime 225 ROI together. And in fact, they even won with this horse and the Risen Star at 21-1. So, yeah. To me, he's not just like the Strong Tide, who I think has a chance to improve and surprise at 50-1. I think Bravazo just needs to return to his best, and he can win this one at 30-1. I like him a lot. There are two other horses that I'm interested in. One is By My Standards. He's got a beautiful line. He looks like he's going to run his best race ever. The sky's the limit for this horse. he's got tactical speed, so I think he should be able to handle the outside post. And I think he's a must-use in the pick five. And the horse that could blow up the super, I think, is the one, Chess Chief. I mean, Bravazo would blow it up too, but imagine having Bravazo and Chess Chief in the super. He's over five at the distance, but all his best numbers have come at that distance. He has a good pattern. He matched his best race in his last race. He's carrying a low weight. He's got an inside post. He's got some major stamina breeding on the dam side with Mineshaft and Roberto in there. And I don't think he can win the race, but I think he can blow up the super. So those are the horses I like the most.
Jump in, Marshall.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to, you know, again, I said I'm going to use Warrior's Charge. I do like sort of is I'm going to make my pick five around Warrior's Charge in one way, and then I have two horses that I like that I think will be okay prices in the Trail's End, the 14th. And so I will also use then Combatant and buy my standards to get to those horses. I probably will bet Warrior's Charge over Combatant. You know, I just, you know, it's a very talented horse. Sadler's done well at Oaklawn. You know, just powerful numbers, you know, and likely to get a Joel type ride. You know, Joel is the strongest finisher in the game. And, you know, if there's pace up front and Warrior's Charge can, you know, in my dream world, dust off improbable and Mr. Freeze, and Combatant can come and get second. And then maybe one of these bombs like Chess Chief, Sky Promise, Captivating Moon, or Night Ops can get the third or fourth spot in the super. I'm actually kind of nervous about Night Ops. He's just much better from 3 to 4, and you know, it's actually run better numbers than Warrior's Charge, and you know, has Javi up. It will be kind of the ignored part of the two Brad Cox horses. You know, these horses is y'all talk about and know that they, you know, they improve so much from 3 to 4. You know, it's hard to look at Improbable's 3-year-old form and blame and not see that he hasn't turned the corner. Well, Night Ops as well. I thought Night Ops was just an allowance horse last year, and he's really run some big races this year. And you know, numbers wise, he's faster than Warrior's Charge. Scott, you didn't get into why I don't have to worry about Improbable.
Oh yeah, I forgot about that. Well, I didn't want to monopolize, but yeah. So he's coming off. He ran a huge number, and I mean, he ran a -3 on the Thoroughgraph sheets. When horses run a -3, they need time. I mean, there are some super horses like Arrogate and Gunrunner who can repeat those kind of numbers. But even those horses had plenty of space between their races. So here we have a horse that just ran a giant race. And I mean, he's capable of running even faster, but not today, because it's only been 3 weeks. Now he gets the same bad post, or it's even worse. He was in the 11 post last time. Now he's in the 14 hole, and he got to go an extra furlong off that big race. It's just not going to happen. Out of the super. Bye-bye, Improbable.
I love it. This is where Scott – yeah,
I'll take it.
Yeah, Scott and I have always had a little bit of a difference of opinion. To me, they can come back where it doesn't hurt him so much in this race. I think where this will knock Improbable out for a while if he runs. I think he could run big, but the time I would play against him is more the next one. Although, you know, this race too depends on how they bet the race. I mean, he's not going to be 8-1 like the morning line. He's probably the favorite in here, I would think, but we'll see. I'm not quite nearly as negative as Scott is on Improbable. I think he's got to be respected. I wouldn't toss him. But, you know, to me, it's probabilistic. So it's improbabilistic. there is a good chance he'll run well, but there's a chance he'll run a really real clunker, too. That's why you always have to look at the price and let it dictate what you do. So I was thinking you were going to go with Bravazo. I like him as well as at a big price. And this is the kind of horse that Wayne Lucas you know, pulls the shocker with. He's done it many times. I typically miss out on them, but this is one, if he does it, I won't miss out on. It's kind of funny because on Twitter, Andy Serling said something like, you know, he thought he should have been 50 to one in the morning line. And I said, well, I like Bravazo. And he says, I feel sorry for you. So I told him I appreciated the concern. But I actually do think he's live in here. And I know his form's kind of muddied up. And maybe he's just not the worst he was back as a three-year-old, but he had a great three-year-old campaign, I thought. And, you know, he's only five. And, you know, last year was a little disappointing, but he's had time off and, you know, he could pop a big race at any time and it might be in here. And he could get a good trip. He could, like you said, Miguel Mena is good at saving ground. You know, he should be mid-pack saving ground, and I wouldn't be surprised at all if he runs well. I just will say two things, other things. One is I am against I don't really like Combatant. I think he's an underlay. I thought his last race was pretty good, but, you know, he barely beat a real long shot in what I thought was kind of a weak race, especially for a grade. I think it was a grade one. By my standards, I've liked the horse, but I just think he's slow. And he's just too slow. He has to improve a lot, and he's a big underlay. So those two, since, you know, they're going to get bet, I just don't like them very much. It's not like they couldn't win, but I will probably leave them both off the pick five if I play it. The one horse we haven't mentioned that I do think is a contender, though, is the 11 Tax, who, you know, he was a pretty solid horse as a three-year-old. He did beat Tacitus that one time where he kind of got a dream trip and Tacitus had a nightmare trip. But, you know, his last race in the Pegasus wasn't too good. That was without Lasix. Now, so I'd be willing to forgive that. And, you know, he certainly could improve off his three-year-old races. His last race was – his last few were all pretty good. He never really runs a bad race with the exception of that one race in the Pegasus. So, you know, there's no reason why, you know, to me – he's better than by my standards and more likely he was already faster. He's more likely to improve and he'll be, you know, maybe 5 or 10 times the price. So Tax would be the one I would use over a horse like by my standards or Combatant. And yeah, that's probably, I probably hit on every horse in the race. So I'll shut up.
Yeah. Tax was very good to me last year. He was my my all-in play in the Jim Dandy. But that was a six-horse field, and I also liked him in the Travers. But then he dogged it in that race, and I've been kind of off him since. But the most reason why I dislike him is just that 11 post is not going to be good for this horse. He's got tactical speed. There's tons of other horses with tactical speed. He's likely to get caught wide. And he also just isn't, he's like by my standards in that he's not really fast enough, in my opinion.
Yeah, but he was running fast races back in April as a three-year-old. So he's got a lot of upside. I mean,
well, I will allow you. And like, I'm looking for something to tell me that Tax is ready to be bet again. Right now he hasn't shown it to me.
That's fair enough. And the post is a bit of a concern, but it's quite a long run to that first turn going a mile and eighth. You get the whole stretch run to get position. He's got an aggressive rider, Carmouche, who, or I think he's riding him, right?
Yeah.
And so he'll use that speed to get position. I don't think he'll get caught too wide. I don't think that's a big concern. So yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I'd like to have his last race been different, would make me a little more interested. But at 15 or 20 to one, I think he's one you want to use.
All right, well, let's go on to the next marquee race. It's the 13th. It's the Arkansas Derby, grade one, mile and eighth, purse of $500,000 for three-year-olds. And I believe it's your turn. This one, Nadal is going to be the favorite, and he'll be the heavy favorite. but he may be a little bit more vulnerable. What did you think, Chris?
Yeah, I totally agree that Nadal is, he has a lot more to work to do to win. And Charlton just looks like he towers over that field. But Nadal, there's competition in here, so he's no mortal lock. He's a good horse. He's got a lot of upside, a lot of positives. You know, been working well, Bob Baffert, Oakland Park. But his numbers don't tower over this field. He's not the fastest horse in the race like Charlton. He doesn't have a big tactical advantage like Charlton. So, you know, he's not, and, you know, he's a lot more vulnerable. And to me, King Guillermo, I am a little biased. I didn't pick him on the pod, but I gave him a little bit of love before his last race when he won at the big price. And if you watch that race, it was just a really, really big race. I mean, he had to use a little bit from the outside to get position early, but he still got caught wide. And he stayed out in the middle of the track all the way around, but then he finished up strong. And if you watch his gallop out, it was just really impressive. I mean, they actually stayed on the horse all the way to the backside, and he galloped strong all the way around the clubhouse turn into the backside. And then finally the rider tried to pull him up and he didn't want to stop. And they cut away, but I mean, the horse wanted to keep going. Even he ran a mile and a half almost, and he still wanted to keep going. So, and his number came back strong. You know, that was off some turf races. So even though his breeding says turf, he clearly liked the dirt and he's bred to go long. You know, I just think he will get, I'm on the morning line, he's not a great bet, but I think Nadal will get bet. I think a few other horses in here like Farmington Road will take some money, even though he's 12-1 on the morning line. You know, I just think King Guillermo was really impressive, and he might be able to take Nadal and beat him at his own game off of that race. So I'm going to watch the odds. I'm probably not going to bet this to win, but I'm going to use King Guillermo a lot in my pick five. There's other contenders in here we can talk about, and I'll let you guys chime in on those. But to me, King Guillermo is not just a one-hit wonder. I think he could be the real deal.
I agree with you on King Guillermo. I noticed a tweet from Mike Welsh after his last workout, and he said that he continues to impress, that he ran 48 with a monster gallop out and finished 6 furlongs in 1:12.80. What did you think, Marshall?
Well, I agree with a lot of what Chris is saying. I mean, there's a chance this horse was always meant to be on dirt. You know, there's Florida, you know, maybe at Gulfstream Park West, they couldn't get the two-turn route to go for the maiden race, so they threw the horse on turf. The horse ran so big, they throw it in the stakes race on turf. But to me, you know, even with a Dixieland band mare, that Uncle Mo is long route. And so what I looked for in this race, because I think Nadal will win, and a lot of my tickets are going to go through Nadal, but, you know, I looked for the one horse that might have enough upside to beat Nadal. And so, you know, I'm going to use King Guillermo and Nadal. Look, Nadal's last race is extremely impressive. I mean, they ran super fast early. I guess, you know, there's some buzz that the rail was good that day, but he just fought off a lot of challengers. And the way Accession, and I know Accession was 82-1, but the way that horse is moving at the end of the race to just be able to dig in and hold on and win the race was a real, really strong performance. I think that Nadal will be 4-5. Again, I'm going to have a lot of my tickets go through Nadal. I am somewhat interested to see, because he'll go eye to eye with Wells Bayou. They're both going to go. I mean, Wells Bayou is going to go, Nadal's going to go. So maybe when, you know, a good horse like Wells Bayou looks him in the eye, you know, that may change things and Nadal may crack a bit. This is a much better division. There are a lot of different directions that you could go. I'm going to say that Nadal wins that, you know, little battle within the race with Wells Bayou. And I'm going to use Nadal and King Guillermo to try to get through this race. After that, you know, I think this is a spread race. I mean, there's a lot of different directions. I'm willing to forgive Silver Prospector. I thought Tayshaun ran, ran a, you know, fairly good race in the Oaklawn Stakes. It for a lot of that race, I thought he was going to win. And, you know, I'm even willing to use Storm the Court a little bit, you know, his third off the layoff and his comeback, you know, and run decent numbers this year. So I think this is this is kind of what the Arkansas Derby should be. I mean, this is a nice race in relative to the first division.
Well, I agree with you on going a little deeper in this race. And I agree with you, Chris, on King Guillermo. He could be the next cigar. I don't know. I mean, there's no reason. He's a must include. That's absolutely critical because he has run faster than Nadal, and he's going to be a much higher price. The bomber I'm going to ask you to consider that I will also include is more like the public handicapper. I have to put a bomber in the pick, and that is Tayshaun. I haven't watched the race yet, his last race, but there's an interesting angle on the racing flow numbers, and basically he ran early into a hot pace. The closer favorability rating of that last race was 100, which meant you got to be a closer. I mean, like if you're a closer, this is your best chance to win, and he was a closer, but he did something that they call a quick to zip, which meant he moved early. He took the lead a little too early for that closer favorability rating. So he moved too early. So he'll probably be an upgrade if I'm reading the numbers right. I don't know until I see them, you know, whether they've upgraded him or not. And sometimes I'm wrong, but he was fast at two. You know, he was not that much slower than Nadal is right now at 2 years old. And this could be a really interesting bomb possibility. So I would absolutely include him. But I will also include King Guillermo and Nadal. And I'm not sure what to do with Silver Prospector or Wells Bayou.
I agree with you on Tayshaun. I mean, to me, after King Guillermo and Nadal, you can almost throw a blanket over them. So I'm interested in any of them that'll be a price. Except, you know, Wells Bayou, I just don't see him beating Nadal. Because I think, you know, they'll have to send and they'll be eye to eye with Nadal, and I just don't expect him to put him away and win the race. So I'm not, especially if the morning line's right, I'm not interested in Wells Bayou. But after that, you know, all those horses you guys mentioned certainly are contenders. Tayshaun, there's nothing not to like about that horse. I agree. It looked like it had a wide trip, made a winning move, and hung late. You could attribute some of that to making the early move and the wide trip. Although you might say, well, get a little nervous that maybe he doesn't want to go a mile and an eighth. So there's sort of two ways to look at that. But to me, given the price, I'll look at it as, hey, if he had gotten a different trip, you know, he can get the mile and an eighth. So that race was really nice, I thought, his last one. But, you know, for me, betting, I'm probably not betting this race unless King Guillermo gets floats up, you know, above his morning line, then I might be a little interested. But I have a lot of respect for Nadal. And to play the pick five, I just don't think you can spread too much with Charlton in there because it's really a pick four. So to me, I'm probably going to roll the dice with King Guillermo and Nadal in this leg. And try to spread, hope to catch the price in the first leg or the last leg mainly. So I'm, you know, hoping King Guillermo could win this at a square price and beat Nadal, and you might get a pretty good pick five payout.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with with Chris, it's, I mean, with both of y'all, really, it's, I mean, this is, you know, if Nadal shows up and can repeat that last effort, it's probably his race, but a lot of different things can happen. And you know, after Nadal, King Guillermo has the most upside, but these are some talented horses that also have some upside. And, you know, I think it can go a lot of different directions. So I'm going to be more spready because I hope to get the price in the 10th, 12th, and 14th.
All right.
But I'll key on Nadal and King Guillermo. Those would be the two I'll key on.
All right. Speaking of the 14th, it's a starter allowance, 1.75 miles on the dirt, purse of $50,000 for 3-year-olds and up. And frankly, I think seeing 14 horses going 1.75 miles is absolutely insane. I can't wait to watch this race. I'm really excited about it. Marshall, what did you think in this one?
Well, this is my favorite race of the Oaklawn meet. It's the Trails End. They run at the end of every meet, 1.75 miles. And I've always dreamed of owning a Trails End horse. I always look to claim a Trails End horse. It used to be you had to run for $7,500 during the meet. Now they've opened it to 10 horses that have run for 10 since 2019. And so there are more options. And I just never found a Trails End horse this year. But I thought I had one earlier in the fall, but it was claimed off me. But this is one of my favorite races. I finished second with Far Out Kaylee in 2017, and he led for 1.75 miles race. So just got caught in that last furlong. Again, it's great, and it's great to see 14 horses here. I like two horses. First off, I like Wild About You for Randy Matthews. Randy trains for me. Unfortunately, I don't own Wild About You. It's not my, I generally don't claim 10-year-olds, but they claim this horse for this race. If you look through its PPs, it has run well at this distance before. Now, there has typically been a Trails End type series where they will run other races. They had a 1.9 race carded. And they've had 1.5 miles races. They did this all last year. Those races haven't gone this year because the fields have been so full. In fact, the 1.3 prep for this on April 16th was originally in the book as a 1.9 race. But when they redrew it for 1.3, it got the full field that they wanted. So this horse has been targeted for this race since the beginning of the meet. I thought he ran really well on January 24th, you know, with some trouble on the inside part of the track, you know, among other horses, and finished third. You know, the mile is too short for him, especially with that short stretch. That horse had no chance in that race. Then came back last time and again was basically a prep over the course in preparation for this race. Again, you go back to the past form, they've been targeting this race. Randy finished second with me in 2017. Then last year he won with You Can Thank Me Later. He actually got one, but was disqualified in a horrendous disqualification. I actually think if I had owned You Can Thank Me Later, or Ken Strike had owned that horse, there would have been a riot at Oaklawn. And so, so he won this race last year, finished second in 2017. And, you know, this is what they targeted. I can talk about my other horse now, or I can hold off and let y'all go, but I'm going to use the 10, and then I like one other horse here that I'll use equally.
Go ahead, Marshall. Go ahead and give your other horse.
Okay. Well, I also like take Charge D'Oro for Chris Hartman. I think this horse is also going to be a price. I'm using more conspiracy theory here in terms of why Hartman is in this spot. I mean, it's a talented enough horse that fits on paper, but Hartman had this horse yesterday, Froster Frippery, that was eligible for the Trails End is a $50,000 purse. He ran the horse yesterday for open 20. And the horse had run for a nickel early in 2019. The open 20 had a $25,000 purse, and that horse was a cinch yesterday. It was an easy winner. over a mile and 16th. And that horse, again, had finished second in the prep to Carlos Sixes. And so just by the fact that Hartman let Froster Frippery run yesterday in order to run Chase Charge D'Oro here, and you're going to get, you know, you're going to get a double digit price, you know, makes me want to investigate this horse. Again, I think that, you know, he got this horse at the fairgrounds, probably thought he had something for this race, targeted this race. You know, the horse ran evenly last time, and in a race like the Trails End, you basically just need to gallop along, you know, near to the pace and, you know, be able to outlast them all. And so, you know, I'm going with the fact that Hartman's an astute trainer. Don't let that 7% at Oaklawn fool you. He's a very sharp trainer and does very well. This has been a very competitive meet. And, you know, I think the 9 and 10 are the two to use, and I think they're going to be good prices. You know, Carlos Six is the likely favorite and probably the most likely winner if you put a gun to my head and say pick one, right? But in terms of where your prices are going to be, I like the 9 and the 10, especially the 10.
I noticed on the 10 that he ran he's a 10-year-old. So on the sheets, it's only showing his last 4 years, but he ran at Indiana at the end of his 9-year-old campaign. He ran a small top, a little better than any race, in the last 4 years. So I'm going to agree with you that he's an absolute use. Chris, what did you think?
Well, I just wild about you. I think this 1 3/4 mile distance, to keep in mind, in the United States, they just don't breed horses for this distance. They don't train horses for this distance. So if you can find a horse that has performed well at a similar distance, that's a big plus. And that's true about Wild About You. And Take Charge D'Oro. Chris Hartman actually had to reclaim that horse to get it into this race, which I think is a positive sign. He had claimed it at Fairgrounds and lost it to Carl Broberg and then claimed it back in its last start. I'm sure thinking about this race, that might've been why he claimed it in the Fairgrounds. So that horse hasn't been the distance. So it is a bit of a question mark there, but it's definitely an in-form horse, which is kind of good for going 1 3/4. I do have a horse I like quite a bit in here. It's the 14 horse River Echo, who we talked about the breeding angle. This horse is bred, it's got European breeding, all day kind of running out of a day lamy mare. So I really like that. This actually is a horse that's bred to get 1 3/4. Its best dirt races are better than anything in this race. It's run some fast races. It hasn't been the distance, but like I said, it's bred to go the distance. And then it's coming in second off a layoff. And we talked about this last week. I think it can be a smart time to claim a horse is right off, first off the layoff, which is why they have these waiver claiming races in a lot of places, because the trainers have to spend all that time and money getting the horse ready. And then you get them claimed right off the bench. And then I always like horses second, third off the layoff. So you got a horse that's been freshened and probably all those aches and pains and injuries are better than they've been for a long time. And they're fit off of one race and they're ready to run their best, even as a 7-year-old. And that's what this trainer did. He took it off of Jerry Hollendorfer and wheels him back a week later. So I'm sure he claimed that horse thinking about this race. And given the breeding, you know, that race probably helped from a fitness standpoint. It would probably be better if he had another start or two to go 1 3/4. But the horse's numbers fit, the breeding fit. You know, I like this quick wheel back in this case, because that last race, if you watch it, it was, you know, it looked like a giveaway race, but the horse had a lot of trouble. He was sort of trapped in the middle of the pack and he got loose at the head of the lane. He went to the lead and a horse came up from him and he just kicked away and galloped out well. So he's still game. He still can run some. He still likes to win races. He's fast and he's really bred to get 1 3/4. So to me, River Echo is the one to play in this race. He's 8-1 in the morning line. It's really hard to tell how they'll bet the horses in this race.
he did draw outside, but they start in a 6 furlong shoot, and there should be plenty of time to, you know, get position before they hit that first turn.
Well, I'm going to agree with you that River Echo is a major contender. He's my second choice. The horse I'm going to go with, I'd be surprised if he's as high as 15 to 1, but it's the 11, the Rouge Diesel, who has won this race for the last 2 years and is 2 for 3 at the distance. He won last year at 8 to 1. He won the year before at 6 to 1. And they had to be keeping this race in mind for this horse when they prepped him in his last race. And I just noticed that they added blinkers in his last race. And I'm like, why do they add blinkers? Well, I scrolling through his PPs, they added blinkers in this race last year and the horse won at 8 to 1. So they just, this time they added blinkers a race before this big race. So yeah, any horse that can win this race twice, if he's double digit odds, this is the horse that I want. He makes sense to me. The trainer can bomb with, he can win bombs at Oaklawn. He's actually 234 ROI at Oaklawn. And he makes a lot of sense to me. I don't know what happened in that last race. I haven't watched a race, but it doesn't really bother me because this is the race that they're pointing to. The other horse, I did like River Echo. The other horse that I will probably have to use is Carlos Sixes. And Marshall, you got me thinking about Wild About You. So hopefully I'll be able to get alive into this leg because I'll probably have to use that horse as well.
Yeah, I find it hard to believe that the 11 will be a price, given the, especially when that Santana gets bet, you know, moving from De La Cruz to Santana. I wouldn't be surprised if the Rogue Diesel is favored. It'll be him or Carlos Sixes, but I do think that Santana is the sort of a tip off on that horse getting bet. You know, the one thing about this race is, you know, it's all these races in big fields. You know, it looks like a spready race potentially, but I do think that, like, on some numbers powers, horses like the Rogue Diesel and Carlos Sixes, they're just pretty darn fast, right, relative to these group of horses. And so, you know, I think Carlos Sixes is the most likely winner, one that prep race will be forwardly placed. You know, these races tend to be run on the front end by the horse that can just, you know, gallop along for, you know, and get the 14 furlongs. So quality road with an aptitude mare looks like that fits the ticket. But again, I'm going to try to get it done with the Wild About You and Take Charge of the Oil.
Rogue Diesel, I agree. He, you know, clearly I don't see how he isn't one of the favorites. I will note that he was in better form coming into this race the last 2 years than he is this year. So that is a little bit of a concern as a 7-year-old, but I don't know how you could leave him off given that he's excelled so well at this distance in the past. I would just add one other horse, and that's the 13 Curlin Gray, who is the one who probably has upside in this race. Seems to be rounding back into good form, and by Curlin, I think maybe could get the distance. He's actually pretty well bred horse, has some pretty good siblings, looked like he was a pretty decent horse as a 3-year-old. And then they took him on and they started running him on poly track and turf. And he really didn't like any of those races, but they've got him back on dirt. He caught a couple sloppy tracks, but his last one was on a fast track, probably the best he's run in a while. Could be sitting on a good race and might get overlooked in here. And he is the kind with a little bit of upside as a 4-year-old versus most of these are like, you know, old, long, getting long in the tooth types. So he's a possibility.
Yeah, he's actually my future book horse for next year's Trails End. You know, I think it, as horses get better with horses get better longer as they get older. I would take Curlin's Gray for next year's race. He's going to be eligible because he was claimed for a nickel on January 12th of this year. But I'm going to wait a year on him. I'll keep him in my stable mail for next year. Get a future book bet on him.
I like Curlin Gray. There's just so many horses in this race. But I agree with you. The horse ran fast as a 2-year-old, which is a predictor of upside later in life. And he improved back, ran a year later, ran a solid number at Fort Erie, believe it or not. And he's kind of circling back to that number. And as a 4-year-old, he really has a license to improve. So we'll have to see what the final ticket turns out to be, but he's certainly also a contender. So I'd have a hard time leaving him off as well. So what are you going to do? We'll see how the tickets flesh out.
All right.
Well, any other plays, you guys? We've had many days to handicap this card. Any spot plays earlier in the card?
I do think there are a couple races just to really pay attention to. The fifth race basically has a bunch of horses that did not get in the Oakland handicap, like Long Range Toddy, R-rated superstar, Bankit, who lost by a head in both the fifth season, the Razorback. It's a grade three stakes in and of itself. There's a really nice horse trained by Grant Forster, Pirate's Punch. He's drawn to the outside, but he's a really talented horse. I'm actually glad he didn't get in the Oakland handicap because he knows one way to go, and that's the front. But that race is worth a watch. It's a great betting race, and it's amazing for a $62,000 allowance race to draw such a tough field. Gamine, who is an impressive debut horse for Baffert, is in the Oakland seventh, and running against Speech for Michael McCarthy, who finished second in the Santa Isabella. So, I mean, that's a other than allowance for 3-year-old fillies, it's got a nice little showdown in that spot. So it's a terrific card. We've got a horse named Benintendi who broke his maiden at Laurel, ran an 87 buyer, but somehow hasn't been able to get through his A other than. He's in the eighth race, first time going long, 8-1 morning line. Breaking from the rail, we're pretty excited about him. We think he has talent, and he's a take charge indie, so should improve going long. And we're shipping him down from Laurel because racing is still on hold in the Mid-Atlantic, trained by Brittany Trimble Russell, who we think is an up and coming trainer who used to be an assistant for Brad Cox. And again, it's a great card of racing. Going to be a fun day. Can't wait for it.
Yeah, Ben. How do you say Benintendi? That horse I like quite a bit. Can you talk a little bit more about that horse? You think the added distance is going to work out in his favor? He gets in light, draws the rail, has Giroux riding. He's fast. He's 8-1 in the morning line, so I'm real interested in that one.
Yeah, I mean, this is not ideally, doing both the ship and long for the first time. I think that was not ideal. So we initially looked at sprinting the horse, but we didn't get into Thursday's A other than sprint race. We drew the 13 in, it cost $2,000 each way to ship a horse down. So $2,000 down, $2,000 back. And we thought, well, we ship down for the 6-furlong race and we don't get in, that'll be just a $4,000 waste of money. So our option was to run long. We've always wanted to try this horse long, but we didn't want to do it in an unfamiliar setting like this. And the horse has a little bit of a head case. And so the trainer was somewhat nervous, but was really pleased with the one hole and thought, now as good a time as any time to take the shot. And so the horse is very talented. And for whatever reason, has either run into buzzsaws or not been able to sort of just advance out of that other than condition at Laurel. But it's a horse we've always thought had talent. Is in the same set of horses that we have with Warrior's Charge. So the same owners of Warrior's Charge own Benintendi. And this was probably the horse that we thought had the most promise, but he, it took him, he, you know, was had a number of different problems that prevented him from getting into the track until he was 3 years old. We thought he would fit better on a more minor circuit, so sent to Brittany Russell. And again, she's taken her time with the horse. And so far, he's, again, very fast. And if he can move up going long, which we think he might be able to, he could be a stakes horse down the road. So we'll see. I mean, we know the horse has ability. If he can get his head straight and get out there, get on the lead and do his thing, then the horse may have a future. I don't think he'll get 8-1. But we think has a big shot.
He's in against Don Vito Corleone, who you picked at 25-1 on the pod last time, and he came through for you. He is one of your major competitors in that race.
Yeah, that Don Vito Corleone, that horse ran and was ridden like it was super live. I mean, that was perhaps a more impressive race than, you know, that horse had every reason to want to quit. Towards the end, and just, you know, that horse is very talented, and I love horses that win first time out, and especially that go through adversity when they win first time out, and that horse is the future. So there are no easy races at Oaklawn right now. You're facing full fields and talented horses shipping from everywhere. You know, the number of horses that are shipping into Oaklawn to run, you know, basically first and second level allowances is just unreal. And we won't see this. Certainly we won't see it again at Oaklawn. So, that's what's made this a real treasure in the midst of all the negative stuff that's gone on, is the how wonderful Oaklawn racing has been.
Did you have any spot plays, Chris?
Just real quick. In the ninth race, I like the horse 11 Home Run Trick. I think this horse could, its last race, I liked it, but it broke through the gate before the race and they still let it run, which I always hate. And, you know, it showed speed and tired, but I had a really good excuse for that one. I think it could get the lead in here. If it can, it'll be a big price. And, you know, it is an interesting play in the ninth. That's the 11 horse Home Run Trick. Just kind of a little bit of an angle there, a chance for a long shot.
All right. I actually have three spot plays, which is pretty rare for me. And they're not necessarily win candidates, but they're at least try super candidates. The first one was in the third race, the 5 Reef's Destiny. The horse is 10-1 morning line, ran pretty fast as a 3-year-old, ran a new top as a 4-year-old in its last race as a 4-year-old, and then took some time off and came back and has been working back to that number. Last race, complete toss, was taken up rank and was going two turns for the very first time. So I always like to bet a horse second time or returning to one turn. And this horse is in light because Kelsey Haar is a bug rider. So it's carrying only 115. And this trainer, he must have some kind of relationship with her because half his horses run with her as the jockey. So that's my first one. The next one would be in the 5th race. I think Long Range Toddy, you know, like Marshall said, it's a very contentious race, and there are fast horses and there are faster horses in this race. But I really like the line. I like the look of the line on this horse. He ran fast as a 2-year-old. He beat Improbable last year on the track as a 3-year-old. And in his last race, he was fractious in the gate, still ran almost his best and could really pop. And he's got a bullet 47-1 workout since that race. And then one last horse, and that is in the ninth race. I'm pretty keen on the 7 rotation. And I don't know what price he's going to be. It's all price dependent. But this horse is just ran a small top in his 4-year-old debut, making him highly explosive. And he's a foal to Tapperture. And he has proven that he can gamely run on the inside and win. So I think he's 9-2 morning line. If you get that or any higher, then he's a big win candidate.
All right. It is a great card, and it is so fun to have all these, quality races back to back to back to back. I mean, there's just no filler. Just really a good card. And it just shows you that if you don't dilute the product, how good it can be. So I hope, beyond, it probably is silly, but that maybe some lessons can be learned from this, from the industry perspective, to try to produce a product like that on a regular basis. Maybe not quite this extreme, but just seems like there's a lot of potential there to improve the product that the players can play.
Okay, well, since we are pushing an hour and a half on this pod, we will wrap it up. I do want to thank Marshall for coming onto the show a second time in 4 weeks. I know handicapping for the show is time consuming, especially with these 14 horse fields. So we really appreciate it.
Well, again, thanks for having me on. I've been handicapping Oaklawn every day. It's been a joy. It's been the one sort of relief from everything else going on. And I will miss it when it's gone, but we have Churchill Downs on the horizon May 16th. And I think we'll have, again, big, big fun fields to look forward to. There.
Yes, that, and good luck with Warrior's Reward in the big race too.
Yeah, if any horse beats me in that race, I hope it's yours. That will conclude show number 62 of the PH Pod. May your first Saturday in May be profitable, and please enjoy the Brooklyn Boogaloo Blowout.
Cheers.
Giddy up.